spies like us. Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd.
We've got a very special assignment for you two.
Boy.
Heads down!
This is my sister. You can all have her.
That's a coffee?
That's a good idea.
Let me see that.
Hey, come on.
Honestly, you two were unbelievable.
Stop it!
Every minute you don't tell us why you're here, I cut off a finger.
Mine or yours?
Yours.
Down!
Hi-oh, Silver! Away!
Chevy Chase.
Get us the hell out of here!
Dan Aykroyd.
To think my high school guidance counselor said I'd never amount to anything.
Spies like us.
We're Americans!
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I am your host, Scott White, and I have two returning guests. I have Miguel Sanchez and Eddie Ball.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
Now, it's going well. Now, every time I've had these two gentlemen on, they've always complained that there's not enough Dan Aykroyd in the Dan Aykroyd project I have chosen.
That's right.
But that's all going to change because we are doing... And this is kind of ironic. We scheduled to do this before all this shit happened in Ukraine.
I know.
Yeah, no kidding.
So we scheduled to do this over a month ago. We're recording this at the end of February, right after Russia invaded Ukraine. But we're doing Spies Like Us.
That threw me back just a little bit when it started, because I'd never seen it before. And then I was just like, oh, very topical. Okay, good for us.
Yes, very topical. Was this the first time for both of you seeing this movie?
That was my first time, yeah.
Rewatching it, I realized that I've probably seen bits and pieces of this movie, but I don't think I've ever seen it in its entirety. But some bits here and there seemed familiar. It seems like a movie my dad would have watched, for sure.
100%.
I watched this movie in the I saw it in the theater, first run in the movie theater.
Oh, wow.
That's my very first note of this movie, is this movie came out 37 years ago. That blew my mind. And then I knew immediately Scott saw this in the theaters.
I did, because at the time I was a huge Chevy Chase fan. And this is 1 year after Ghostbusters. So Dan Aykroyd was still hot, because this was 1985 and Ghostbusters was 84. Also, yeah. Like Ghostbusters and this movie, Spies Like Us, were written for Aykroyd and John Belushi. So, but Belushi died and Murray took his spot in Ghostbusters, and Chevy Chase took John Belushi's spot in Spies Like Us.
Ah, it's making sense. I had, like I said, I had never seen this movie before. I've seen this poster about a million times. I feel like walking through Blockbuster as a kid, it really stood out to me. But just never saw it. It was a good time. Can't wait to talk about it.
Well, let's get into it. So the movie Spies Like Us is basically what it sounds, where Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase are used as decoys in this secret mission. And they're the comic relief to the real spies that are they're doing the real spying in this movie. Well, what did you guys both think of the movie?
Ed, you go first.
It was interesting. Scott, you mentioned that this was a year after Ghostbusters came out. So I imagine there was like a lot of buzz surrounding people like Dan Aykroyd and stuff like that. So going into this movie, I don't know what I was expecting. I really had no expectations whatsoever. And, you know, it felt, and this is me getting brutally honest here, this felt like a movie that just, like, both of these guys, Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd, at the height of their careers, just did for a paycheck. And I get that purely because I know that both of them are very funny people and are both capable of, like, actual comedy. but I just found this one like a one-trick pony kind of thing all the way throughout. It was just like a movie that was solely based on making a joke. Like, it was just joke after joke, and they just happened to get Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd on to do it kind of thing.
Yeah, I definitely felt like some of the jokes were just like, yeah, we're playing to this bit. Sometimes I didn't think it was all that hilarious, but a couple times it did make me laugh. It actually dawned on me about halfway through the movie that I need to stop and take notes so that I can remember these things. overall, I thought it was like a good experience. I definitely ranked it as one of like my lower Dan Aykroyd movies of the ones we've watched. I felt like for the time it was probably pretty hilarious. I mean, there were a couple of really good bits, like Chevy Chase in the exam room, you know, just like being absolutely over the top with how he's cheating. The bit in that got me really going was when he stands up and his, like, he's got his arm in a cast when he walks in, and then as he stands up, you realize that's a fake arm, and he's got his two arms moving around and this other one flopping. I don't know why, it kind of just reminded me of the silly scene in Total Recall, the three boobs, you know what I mean? him having three arms moving around like that. I just thought it was kind of hilarious. And Dan Aykroyd playing this like straight man to Chevy Chase, but also like having jokes of his own that are a little more like word plays and things like that. At times it was clever, and at other times I was just like, you know, I'm having a fun time. It is what it is.
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd does his word play speak in this movie a couple of times.
Goldbart. Where's the brain for the Scram Jam 7000?
Procurement picked it up over an hour ago.
Well, was it fixed?
Yeah, new voice scramblers and everything.
Huh. Well, what about that red Chinese radio chatter?
It's done. Here you go.
Done. That was a static-filled triple-scrambled microwave transmission between two soldiers talking in Mandarin Chinese.
Well, the Chinese were only using a simple polyphonetically grouped 20-square-digit key transposed in booster photonic form with multiple nulls. They broke it with this.
A Drogon's decoder wheel? They put these things into cereal boxes for kids.
Yeah, I found it in a box of, Lucky Charms.
Break it down again with the machines.
I already did.
Fallen, clean up the desk!
I can't get over how young Dan Aykroyd looks in this movie.
Yeah. Like a totally different person. And honestly, Chevy Chase now, too. Chevy Chase obviously doesn't. But yeah, I mean, they just look like almost fresh out of college.
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks younger in this movie. Yeah. He looks younger in this movie to me than he did in Ghostbusters, which came out a year earlier.
It's that shaggy haircut for sure.
It is the shaggy haircut. Yeah.
No, he definitely looked very, just like a Dan Aykroyd we're just not as familiar with, at least I guess from Miguel and I's point of view. But like you said, in Ghostbusters, he seemed weirdly older. But yeah, it was just like the haircut, the kind of nerdish behavior, like fresh out of college Dan Aykroyd.
He wrote this, or he had the story, him and Dave Thomas of SCTV. So that was why Belushi, because Aykroyd wrote Ghostbusters and he had the story for this one. So that's why he had Belushi in mind for these roles. And John Landis directed this, and John Landis directed The Blues Brothers. So there was a lot of common themes. Aykroyd and Chase were from Saturday Night Live, and then his writing partner, Dave Thomas, they were both from SCTV, and then the director was from Blues Brothers. So these are all people that he's worked with before.
They have some pretty good, it seems like it was a good team, you know what I mean? Good chemistry.
Yeah.
I'm reading the Wikipedia page while I'm listening, and I'm also finding that the critical reception to this movie was a little spotty as well. The very first line was from a Washington Post critic, Paul Adanasio, who called Spies Like Us a, quote, a comedy with exactly one laugh. That seems harsh. I laughed more than one time, but
yeah,
I think he means just like the kind of one bit joke.
Possibly. Yeah.
I mean, it just, the whole movie takes on a certain tone, you know, of like for jokes, as far as, I don't know, it's almost like very on the nose in every moment. Like, you can see the setup coming. It's still good. It's just, maybe, I don't know, I'm assuming that's what he meant, but no, I definitely laughed more than just once, but I can see perhaps where he would get that.
Well, I remember this, it's been a while since I've seen this, and I remember it being very slapsticky, which it is.
Yeah.
But also, there's a lot, this is classic Chevy Chase sarcasm in this movie. So I laughed a lot of his at his subtle, you know, digs at people and his sarcasm. I laughed quite a bit at the more subtle jokes in this movie as well.
Yeah.
I watched this with my wife, Kristen, last night, and I don't think she was a fan of Chevy Chase. His character is pretty much sexist, and he's like a, you know, womanizer. And she would, every now and then he would say something. I wish I could remember the exact joke he said, but he would just say something and she would be like rolling her eyes. Like, oh my God. it is. It's from 1985. It is what it is.
That just felt like very Chevy Chase. Like there's a certain, like every Chevy Chase movie I feel like I've watched, even like the Family Vacation movies, he's always somehow a womanizer in some sort of way. Yeah. Just like, and it's very nonchalant, just like, hey, I'm a goofy guy. But how's it going? You know?
That is true. Yes. This is this classic Chevy Chase in this movie. And I want to make it clear that through this entire movie, Chevy Chase does absolutely nothing. This is all Dan Aykroyd. If Dan Aykroyd was not with Chevy Chase would have been dead right from the beginning.
Sure.
That does remind me. One of the laughs that I got the most was when they get caught by those Russian military, whoever, when they're in the snow, and they say something. They point the guns at him, and Chevy Chase is like, "Oh, well, they're just gonna do some behind the scenes work, and they're just gonna, the government's gonna get us back home." And he was like, "Good luck with that." And then he jumps into the snow and runs off and leaves him alone to be captured. I thought that was hilarious. A lot of cameos in this movie. I only caught one at the time that I actually pointed to the screen and said, "Is that?" It was Sam Raimi, the guy that directed all those Spider-Man movies.
No, it was Ted Raimi, his brother.
No way.
Wait a minute. I think you might be right. It might have been Sam. It was either Sam Raimi or Ted Raimi.
It was definitely a Raimi. I would have said. Raimi.
But John Landis has the, you know who the other guy who was with, either Sam or Ted Raimi? He was one of the Coen brothers.
I was about to say, Joel Coen makes a cameo as a, he's like a security guard at the base. Like the Area 59 / outdoor movie theater.
Right. Huh. And there's another, there's like three or four. One thing Landis likes to do in his movies is have directors make cameos as actors. And there's a couple other director cameos in this movie. So you looked it up. Is it Ted or Sam?
It is Sam Raimi.
It is Sam Raimi. I stand corrected.
And I was just like blown away. I was like, that's the guy that directed all those Spider-Man movies.
Yep. Evil He's Dead, huge. Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't watch any of those.
And B.B. King was there too.
Yeah.
He was the King. Guy who said, "Let's get it. How about you guys get a Pepsi?"
I'm just kind of
very tongue in cheek. Those like throw in jokes there. No, really, get a Pepsi.
I gotta say,
like, 80s, I picture the 80s as being the height of the Pepsi craze, right?
Yes. Pepsi was closest to Coke. Right now, Coke is ahead of Pepsi. Because they had Michael Jackson. That's when they had Michael Jackson doing commercials.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sure. Yeah. Just hearing that name drop, you're just like, oh, yes. Here we are in the 80s where Pepsi was. I just like remember all of those like other movies like in the early 90s and stuff. It's like Pepsi was the one to talk about kind of thing.
You know, you were talking about directors. Terry Gilliam was also in it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He was the doctor.
He was one of the doctors.
Yeah.
That was one of those classic comedy bits.
That was definitely one of my favorite parts. Was that operation table scene? They both played it very well. As Dan Aykroyd went under the table to figure out the facts, and Chevy Chase leaning over as he did so, just to examine the guy's face. It was good. There are moments throughout this movie where those two just really shine together. It really works well.
I give you Dr. Julius Greenbaum.
Thank you, Doctor. I'll just step out for a smoke. Perhaps I'll stay here. Today, we will be removing the patient's appendix. The first step in an operation of this particular type is... to shave the patient. Forget it. Get on with it. We'll skip the shave and go directly to the operation. The second step in an operation of this type is... anesthetic.
But can't you tell he's already been given the required injection of pentothal?
Of course. He's already been given the required injections. All right. Let us begin the operation. Thank you, Doctor. And now the first incision.
Doctor, isn't that incision a bit high for an appendix?
Do you want to do the operation? Fine, you come on up here and you do it.
Imhouse.
He was cutting into his chest.
Did you see me cut into his chest? Did I cut his chest? I was probing to determine muscle tone and skeletal girth. It's a new technique. We mock what we don't understand.
Yeah.
I gotta say, you know, like I had mentioned earlier, I've seen the poster a bunch, and I always have this image of them wearing this, like, a bunch of, you know, heavy snow gear in the snow. I was surprised at how much of this movie took place before they even got to, you know what I mean, like, the whatever in Russia they were at, you know what I mean? They did a whole, like, Pakistan journey where they were in the desert, and I wasn't expecting that at all. I thought we were going to cut straight to Russia, and all the hijinks were going to happen there. They saved it for the end.
Yeah, they went on location in this movie, which is something you don't usually see nowadays. But yeah, this was like a globe-trotting movie.
It just feels bizarre. I was just convincing myself the whole time. It's like, oh, that's got to be like New Mexico and stuff like that. You know, the usual Hollywood spots to fill in for such exotic places, you know. That's hilarious that they actually went there for this.
I can't imagine them actually hanging out in Pakistan.
Yeah.
But good for them.
I also want to comment on all the old character actors that are in this movie. To me, they make the movie, especially so we really have four main bad guys. It's two generals from the army and then two Washington sleazeballs. So the gist of the movie is they want to blow up a Russian satellite because...
I felt like I had to look up real quick. I'd be like, yeah, what was that plot?
Yeah. They wanted to blow up a Russian satellite because they thought that the satellite was spying on the USA.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So they have to go into Russia and they were going to have Russia. No, no. Oh, shit. I'm sorry. No. Russia had a missile. That was right.
Yeah.
That's right. Russia had a missile and their job was to get to Russia, launch the missile, and then the U.S. was going to blow up the missile in midair. And
got it.
Yeah, I got it now. Right. Just the army the army guys talking about, you don't want to think these guys exist in the army, but you know they do exist in the army in real life.
Yeah,
these kind of people.
Definitely. You're talking about the bad guys.
Yeah, the bad generals.
Got it.
Yeah,
I thought you meant Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd for a second. I'm like, yeah, I mean, maybe there's some bumbling idiots in the military. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, for sure, there's definitely bumbling idiots. The actor Bruce Davison.
Yes.
Who's like, he was in a bunch of, he was like in a 90s sitcom, but he was also in like X-Men movies.
Oh, yeah.
Where I recognize him from.
He was so young.
Yeah, exactly. But then they turned out to be like the bumbling idiots amongst the generals. Not necessarily idiots, but more of just like they were out of the loop. Like these army generals had their own other side plot, I guess. Trying to, what was it? One of them said at the end is like, if it's for the cost of the, you know, if it's the American way of life and or destruction or whatever, we'll take that kind of thing. Take the American way of life, which I guess like during the Cold War era, you know, it was either A or B, you know, the American way of life or communism.
Right.
He said, I wrote this down, Ed, you saying that reminded me that I made a note of this. He said, we're preserving the American way of life. And I wasn't quite sure of the plot 100%, but I knew there was like a nuclear bomb involved. And I was like, are we preserving right now?
The American way of life, Miguel. All of that stuff. But they would bomb parts of America to do that?
Wasn't that the implication that they were, or that's what they were saying?
Right, that's why they all went off and had sex one last time.
So they launched the rocket, the beam misses the rocket, and now the rocket's going to hit the USA. And the two Washington sleazebags are like, well, we got to call the president and let him know that it's not Russia attacking us. And from what I gather, I think this might have been the general's plan all along, was to not intercept the rocket so the rocket would hit, so the U.S. would retaliate, so we'd get into a war.
War.
And so we could take over Russia and put the American way of life. It's sort of convoluted.
I see. Okay. Spreading the good word of the American way of life.
Right.
Yeah.
Got it.
With nuclear weapons. But,
go ahead, Ed. Sorry.
It was a little hazy at first. It was hard to see, like, other than the fact that Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase were supposed to be distractions, much like their situation, the audience doesn't really know what the objective is necessarily.
I think the objective is sort of in the background. The movie
it's
is
almost
just,
like a MacGuffin.
It's like a MacGuffin. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going bit to bit.
This is based on the old Bing Crosby and Bob Hope road movies. It's an homage to that. Even that Bob Hope makes a cameo in this movie.
There he is, right there, Bob Hope as himself slash golfer.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I got kind of lost in this thread that I was reading. It says the title song Spies Like Us was written and performed by none other than Paul McCartney. I've never heard this song before. Was this song written for this movie, or was that a song that already existed?
No, it was written for this movie.
Oh.
And if you look it up, there's a video of Paul McCartney, Chevy Chase, and Dan Aykroyd performing this song.
Oh.
Yeah, you can look it up on YouTube, yeah.
I feel like that must have cost a fortune. But it's pretty good.
It had to have been at the time. I mean, right?
The movie cost about $22 million to make, and it made $70 million. So it was a pretty decent hit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm just reading it. Do you know how much it made opening weekend, Ed, if you had to take a guess? I'm pulling a Chase from the Movie Gap.
No, I don't. I have no clue, honestly.
It was $8.6 million opening weekend.
Wow. So So a good chunk of it's changed back already, right off the bat.
Yeah. So this movie is set in the 80s. I mean, besides the overall arc of the Cold War, the only thing that really reminds you that it's in the 80s is every single scene set in a military or a political office, there's just a giant picture of Ronald Reagan.
Hell yeah.
I was going to mention that. That's hilarious.
It was like one of the first things I noticed. And then one of the last things I saw before we turned the movie off, we were in the credits and it was saying, and Ronald Reagan as himself. And for a half second, I was like, wait, was he in this movie? But no, I think it was just all these photos of him.
They also showed a clip when we first meet Chevy Chase, when he's watching like a clip of a movie and he's like got his headset on. He's watching a Ronald Reagan movie.
Oh, that bit was lost on me. That's right. Yeah. Ronald Reagan was an actor.
Okay. Yeah, no, that was the like first moment where I was just like, hang on, is that Ronald Reagan? It's funny because he's like part of the Secret Service or whatever.
We got to the very end of the movie and it said, and also Ronald Reagan or whatever. And I was just like, when did I miss this? I think that would have been hilarious if he was just in the background of, you know. But here we are.
Yeah, no, that was a good gag throughout. I enjoyed seeing, like, that. I was like, halfway through, I was just like, all right, that's going to be like the fourth time I've seen Ronald Reagan pop up. Like, it's good timing for sure.
What did you guys think about that 1985 Earth CGI? Every time they went to space, that planet, it didn't even look like Earth. It was just blue. It was just like a blue ball.
Some of the CGI is kind of sketchy, but it is time appropriate CGI. I understand. 1985. Yeah.
I wrote Earth CGI was dope, practically 2001 A Space Odyssey.
I wrote that it just like it reminded me of kind of like primary school, you know, educational videos about space and stuff. Like the planet Earth, here we are.
You're like, it's so beautiful.
It's all its majesty. It's just like a blue, blurry ball.
Well, I think I enjoyed this movie. Maybe it's just because of my time. I enjoyed it. You were right about the same joke, because there's this montage of in training where they're put through this training, and it's a montage of the same joke, them getting put through hell.
Yeah.
But there's one scene where clearly when they're getting dosed with the flamethrower, those are stuntmen. But there is scene where they have to jump in this mucky. And it's them, because they go in and they come up and you see it. So they actually did that stunt where they had to jump into this putrid water. And hats off to them for doing that. So
I had a very visceral reaction to that in the moment. Kristen, too. I mean, it was just like, it was disgusting. And the fact that like Chevy Chase, he kind of jumps in like feet first and you're like, yeah, this is really gross. But like Dan Aykroyd, he dives in head first. And you're like, this is disgusting. He comes up all covered in shit. And it's just like, no. But good for them. They made it through training. What were they called? They were called something like GTG 20s or something like that.
G20 or something like that.
I didn't know what that meant, but I assumed it was a good ranking.
Before they get the training, Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd are in this plane. They don't think they're going to have to jump out of this plane. They have parachutes on. But they push him out, and I'm thinking, you didn't give these guys any parachute training. How are they? It's like they may not know how to pull the cord or anything like that.
They'll figure it out, and they did.
They did.
That would be terrifying, having to jump out and not really expecting to.
Pushed out at the last second. Or maybe that's the best. Like, eliminate that anticipation of having to jump out of the plane. It's like, well, you're about to depart the plane right now. Bye.
Yep.
That was one of the parts that made me laugh. They land in this forest, and all of a sudden they're attacked by ninjas.
Where are we?
I don't know. I wasn't watching. I lost everything at 7,000 feet.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. It's a dick fur.
What's a dick fur?
To pee with.
Was that me?
We need a plan. Let's play dead. Come on, super spy, think of something.
You're the diplomat. Talk to them.
All right. Stop right there. And I'll bring back the sun. Okay. This is my sister. You can all have her. I hear she's very good.
Just take another step and I start swinging.
You hear that? He's threatening you. Let's get him.
For God's sake, show some balls.
I think it's too late to try to impress him.
Oh, man. I was lost in that point. I was like, what is going on? Some really good visual gags, though. I can think of a handful of bits that like actually made me laugh. But when the ninjas show up and the one ninja is like swiping his sword all over the place, swap, pop, 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 and then like all these trees fall, I was like, this is hilarious. I get it. I'm into it. Let's go. No, I was gonna say, and then that just ended up being like that was the military, right? Like he was just some sergeant showed
up.
Getting
dropped into the training, yeah.
Oh yeah. Just a little bit more training.
Like literally dropped.
I cut you off.
No, I was just gonna say it kind of reminded me a lot. I don't know, Miguel, if you've seen this movie, but the whole training sequence, rather, just kind of reminded me of Stripes a little bit. I mean, it felt very. Like, not in a bad way. I was just, because, like, a good chunk of Stripes is them training. And then, of course, they're off, like, fighting the Russians later. But, yeah, it's just, like, all of these, like, ludicrous scenarios. And you've got, like, Bill Murray just kind of, like, cracking his way through it.
Is Dan Aykroyd in that movie?
No. That's Bill Murray and Harold Ramis.
Darn.
Yeah, Harold Ramis, yeah.
Now, one of the things that, I don't know, I wouldn't say took me out of this movie, but no matter what type of danger they're in, you never get the feeling that Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd are scared, where they no. probably should be scared. I mean, Chevy Chase is being a smart-ass self, and Dan Aykroyd is just being Dan Aykroyd. But you never get the feeling that they think they're in danger.
Maybe they just don't know enough to know that they're in danger, you know, except for Bill, not Bill Murray, sorry, Dan Aykroyd in that one spot where he jumps away. But other than that, maybe they're just a bunch of bumbling.
And like maybe towards the end where they just kind of maybe not appreciate, but just like understand the gravity of their situation again when they go off and sleep with people. I just like how they just like automatically, well, might as well spend these last few hours together, right?
It was like 28 minutes.
28 minutes! And so we're going to jump to... We'll come back, but we jump to the ending.
Yeah.
They launch the missile. It's heading to the U.S. And like Ed said, everybody... It's like, well, it's going to strike in 28 minutes. And everybody pairs off to have sex. And then we cut to Dan Aykroyd, and he has this idea of like, oh... I can stop the rocket. And it was like, so everybody had the shortest sex in movie history because they had 28 minutes till the Earth was destroyed. So they were able to have sex and stop the rocket from destroying the world.
That's good. That record time, well, you know,
if anything, it may have just been the most accurate depiction of sex
that, you know what, you're probably right.
It's just like, oh, well, that's done. Let's save the world. It's funny how he like kind of clicked with them after the fact. Like he just had to clear his headspace.
Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase does nothing in this movie. He does only thing he does is get them into trouble, such as he claims he can do that surgery, and Aykroyd is the one who knows Russian. He's the one who knows electronics. He's the one who knows geography. Yeah, this is all Dan Aykroyd getting them from point A to point B to point C.
And Chevy Chase just along for the ride.
Seducing women where he can.
Now, the woman that he seduces is Dan Aykroyd's wife in real life.
No way.
Yeah.
That's yes. hilarious.
Yes. Yes, Donna Dixon. And they were married at the time. So Dan Aykroyd had to spend this movie watching Chevy Chase trying to get into his wife's pants.
But if he wrote it, and then he was just like, oh, well, hey, my wife could play this role. It would be interesting. At that point, I'm just like wondering what his fucking intentions are. That's hilarious. I didn't know that.
Because there's one scene where Chevy Chase claims to have nerve damage in his hand, and he just puts his hand on her boob. He just puts his hand on her boob, and it's like, yeah, can't feel anything. And he's just like filling her up.
I also love later, right as she leaves in that scene, he commits just a little bit further, and he like has this like limp-wristed wave goodbye.
Yeah.
It was really good. Chevy Chase is he's got some good physical comedy in this movie, especially later on in the movie when the Russians, they throw a grenade at them. And he picks it up and he's like, what's this? And Dan Aykroyd's like, you don't want it. And then he just like chucks it back and, like so daintily. And it lands in this box of grenades. These are the moments that I was like, I'm engaged. This is hilarious.
Chevy Chase gets captured and Dan Aykroyd goes to save him. And all of a sudden, Dan Aykroyd knows how to ride a horse and use a machine gun. So I guess that was... Two machine guns at the same time.
Riding a horse. I was like, what is this?
Dan Aykroyd wrote this script. He goes, you know what? If Chevy Chase is going to fuck my wife, I'm going to ride in on a horse with guns.
Wielding two guns. That's great.
But what I thought was nice about that scene is, so he comes in riding, guns a-blazing. He rescues Chevy Chase, and he goes to pull Chevy Chase up on the horse, and Chevy Chase ends up pulling him off the horse. So I thought that was, you know, it started off as a competent action scene, and then he's just like, he goes for the rescue, and he ends up, you know, getting pulled off the horse.
You know, it's funny that you mention an action scene, and this is very much like a comedy action movie. The vibe that I got while I was watching, I just was really reminiscing or reminded about, like, Seth Rogen... and like Pineapple Express having some like it's a comedy but it's also an action movie their whole vibe of Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase being these like, you know, paired up trying to go solve this world crisis kind of deal was also kind of reminding me of Seth Rogen and James Franco in the Interview, you know, where they go to North Korea. And I just felt like, okay, this is kind of like a pairing that really kind of established something in its time, you know what I mean? Like people could like be inspired off of, like maybe Seth Rogen or whatever, but
almost like a fish out of water scenario.
Yeah.
Because they're like the two incompetent guys in this, like, who end up ultimately being in this like world changing event,
and they save
when
the
they
day
were supposed to just be, yeah, they were supposed to just be decoys or whatever.
So the people in charge set them up as decoys to be killed. So Donna Dixon and her partner. Donna Dixon is the woman that Chevy Chase is trying to sleep with through this entire movie. Her partner are the real spies. And they put Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd out in the field to distract the Russians from the real spies. And it's just a comedy of errors that Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd, it's actually not a comedy of errors. It's actually Dan Aykroyd, when they make contact with the two guys, he figures out that they're Russians. Yeah, and Chevy Chase is just oblivious. It's like, if it doesn't have two legs and a pair of tits, Chevy Chase is pretty much oblivious to what's going on around him.
You know, that was another really good moment for me, because obviously the joke in the moment is Dan Aykroyd's realized they're bad guys and, oh, I got to take a leak and don't you have to take one too? And then they have that back and forth of, no, I don't have, no, blah, blah, blah.
Hey, listen, can we stop?
What's the matter?
I got to take a leak.
You should go, too. What are you, my mother? Don't you think I'm capable of determining my own time to go to the bathroom?
So, isn't now one of those times?
No.
You mean you don't feel a certain degree of urgent pressure on the inner wall of your bladder now, right at this moment?
No, I'm fine.
Well, wouldn't you feel more comfortable being fully relieved of any excess fluids that might be building up immediately now?
I gotta take a whiz.
Don't go away.
Oh, we'll be here.
These guys are not our legitimate contacts. These guys are KGB Special Branch.
Oh, come on.
Don't tell me to come on. That was a Russian wristwatch. I know the country of origin of every timepiece in the world. That was a Russian copy of a 1969 Timex Digital.
What is this, some kind of a hobby with you?
Basic. Most common slip-up in espionage. We've walked right into enemy hands.
But when he finally gets on board with, like, oh, I guess I should go with him, and then they turn around, and all of a sudden, these Russian guys or whatever have gone from the car to, like, into the field, and that, like, that turn that they're right there on them, that was cracking me up, man. I thought that bit was hilarious.
I recognize the, what's the best way to describe this? The more handsome of the two Russian assets. I recognized him from Animal House. Find him right now on IMDb because
James Norton.
I recognized him from Animal House, and he's a piece of shit in that too. So good for him.
Classic. That classic
Russian asset to like frat boy piece of shit. Yeah, or vice versa. Obviously, this came out after Animal House, but. Yeah, it was chock full of little cameos here and there throughout. It was funny.
Animal House was directed by John Landis, so I'm sure he remembered him from that movie and brought him in to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And you said he did Blues Brothers prior to this, right?
Yes, he directed Animal House and then Blues Brothers.
Yeah, those are great. Yeah. I see, but, and that's the thing, is like thinking like, now that this was a John Landis film, I just like the jokes felt a little bit more one-noted than things like Animal House and Blues Brothers. That might just be me. I might just be like a cynical son of a bitch. But like movies like Blues Brothers and Animal House, I love those movies and they crack me up every time. And while I got some laughs out of this one, like we were saying, it's just kind of like a one trick pony throughout, as far as its jokes. I mean,
the vibe that I got from it was, it just felt like every now and then some of the jokes, it's like there wasn't quite a rhythm to them, and we would all of a sudden be at the punchline of the joke and we would kind of just move on, and it felt like kind of a looser comedy. It's not like not every moment landed at the right punch, but you kind of like can kind of vibe with it a little bit, like, okay, it's just like a little offbeat, you know?
You remember that dick fur joke like towards the beginning of the movie?
What's a dick fur, right? Yeah.
Yeah, what's a dick fur? I was just like, oh boy. Like like Chevy Chase, you walked right into that one, or Dan Aykroyd, whoever was the receiving end of that joke. But
no, Chevy Chase
was like as he was saying it, I was just like, what's a dick fur? Like it was just like very, very on point. Like you could see it.
Well, then they talk about his dick later, about you're just thinking with your dick and maybe your dick's not so dumb. Chevy Chase's dick gets a lot of gets a lot of jokes into this movie.
Good for his dick,
which is fitting.
So I don't mean to jump ahead too much, but I only have so many notes, so I'm just reading my notes as we go.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
We've watched a good handful of Dan Aykroyd movies together now, and I was just curious, like, where do you guys throw Spies Like Us? You know what I mean? Is it, like, one of the better Dan Aykroyd movies? Is it one of your least favorite Dan Aykroyd movies? Is it in the middle? I also have a list of the movies we've watched, if you guys want to hear.
Yeah, let's.
So just together, we've watched Indiana Jones, Driving Miss Daisy, Christmas with the Cranks, no specific order here, and Spies Like Us.
It's just, so hard to refer to Temple of Doom as a Dan Aykroyd movie. Like, literally.
True.
Because that would win in a weird way.
You know, kind
of,
right?
Scott, maybe you can answer this. Off the top of my head, I can't remember. Dan Aykroyd was in 1941, right? That Steven Spielberg comedy?
Yes,
okay,
he was.
That makes sense. So do you think they did that kind of back-to-back, Temple of Doom and 1941?
No, because 1941 was in 1979, and Temple of Doom was 1984. So Spielberg.
Temple of Doom was like a little earlier than that, but I guess that makes sense because like Raiders of the Lost Ark was until 1980, I guess. But
yes.
Okay. All right. I was just curious because that would have been like, oh, that's why Dan Aykroyd showed up in the Temple of Doom because they'd just done 1941.
We talk about John Landis doing director cameos. Steven Spielberg did a cameo in the
Blues Brothers. I don't know. Scott, you answer Miguel's question. Sorry, we detracted a little bit from Miguel's question. So,
I would say the best one out of the bunch is Temple of Doom. But if we take that out.
So you got to take it out, yeah.
If we take that out, I would rate them... Driving Miss Daisy is the best out of what we've done. And then what are the other ones? I know we did Christmas at the Cranks.
And Spies Like Us.
And Spies Like... So it would have to be Driving Miss Daisy, Spies Like Us, Christmas with the Cranks.
That's respectable, because Christmas with the Cranks was pretty bad.
Yeah.
I know that's not our favorite. I definitely put, obviously, Indiana Jones first. Driving Miss Daisy, I put next. And then I put a movie on this list because it came to mind because I've seen it so many times, but we didn't get to watch it with you, Scott. You did this episode with someone else. I can't believe it. But I think you've already done Sergeant Bilko with Steve Martin.
I did it by myself.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's respectable then. I can appreciate that. Yeah, I thought that one was... I like Sergeant Bilko, so I put that on the list even though I didn't actually watch it with you. And then I put Christmas with the Cranks, and then I put Spies Like Us, because I just was like, like I said, sometimes the comedy just kind of felt like a little off, but it was there. So I don't know. It was maybe one of my lesser favorites, but that's okay.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm starting to redo some of the older ones that I did because my Sergeant Bilko was one of the second or third podcasts that I did. So we'll redo it. I'll redo it with both of you.
There you go.
We'll redo Sergeant Bilko.
It's a date.
It's another Ed. Have you ever seen that movie, Ed?
I have. I mean, it's definitely been a while, but I've definitely seen it. Yeah.
That was, for some reason, one of like the only Dan Aykroyd movies. I know it's not his specific movie, but that was like one of the only Dan Aykroyd movies I can remember actually owning. And so we watched it a lot in my house, and I was a fan. I would love to go back and look at it.
I can't remember. Is he the bad guy in that one?
He's like the military base, like general or something.
He's not the bad guy. Phil Hartman is the bad guy in that movie.
R.I.P. That's right. Yeah. R.I.P.
R.I.P. Phil.
Yeah. Okay. He's like the sniveling other sergeant or whatever, corporal.
I can see how much Spies Like Us meant to you guys, because now we're talking about Sergeant Bill.
I just watched it last night, you know, for the first time. I'm sure Ed, something similar. I would give it another go, you know, I think to really try to appreciate it a little bit more. But just like on first impression, I was just like, maybe not so much for me.
I feel like so much of it felt so familiar. So I know I've seen bits and bobs of it through, like probably with my dad throughout the years, but just never as a whole. And there were moments where, like, the two of them playing off each other, I think, was when it worked best. Like, when they were taking their examination, when they were at the operating table, when they were doing their training, when they did the zero gravity thing. What do you call that? The spinning thing? And they both came out with that. It's just, like, good physical comedy like that, where they really shine. The last thing I was going to say was just like, I felt like maybe Chevy Chase got the more fun role out of the two. Dan Aykroyd was more of the straight shooter, even though he had his moments as well. You could tell, especially I'm sure at the time, Scott, like, Chevy Chase was definitely the more of the clownish figure compared to the two. Cause like we were saying, Dan Aykroyd was actually more educated and more prepared for their scenario, and eventually, ultimately, saves the day, really. And Chevy Chase is the one who's asking for a tent at the end of it. You know what I mean?
Well, I will say this. I got kind of excited at the end when Dan Aykroyd comes up. We can we can recall the rocket. It won't crash. It's so he's giving all these orders to the Russians and to Chevy Chase and to Donna Dixon. And I was like, oh, my, you know, I was like, I'm getting a little excited. I was like, oh, this is kind of exciting here, even though I know how it turns out.
Bring me the sat scram dish. I think we can recall it.
What do you mean recall it? You mean like a defective Pinto?
Take this up. Climb. Yes, Navir. Grab a rocket. Grab a hammer. We can divert it. It's made to respond to in-flight commands through their sat relay network.
Here's a rock.
Go to the sat scram terminal.
Now what?
Smash that thing.
It's broken.
Bring it here.
Not the rock. What's the use? It's probably all over anyway.
No. All we have to do is switch sending boards. Okay, Boyer, start sending the launch sequence in reverse order.
Yes, sir.
Fitzhugh, hold these together. Gotta make the splice. Hold it together.
Ow, I got a shock.
And you will. I don't care how painful it is. You've got to hold them together. You are the circuit bridge. I need
is it bigger than the bread box?
I need
the title of a movie.
Animals in their natural habitats. Title of the book.
Things that are round. Things in a square. Things that are being electrocuted.
Got it!
Miles. 5. 0. 0.
We did it!
We did?
We did it!
Can I borrow your tent?
But there's something weird about that scene. So we've already mentioned that they went to Morocco. They went to all these exotic places to film, and you can clearly see that they're out in a forest. But then during that scene, they're green screened. There's a couple of scenes where it's obviously green screened, and I couldn't understand that unless those were reshoots back in Hollywood. But it just stands out because they're obviously outside in this forest, the snow-covered forest in Russia. And then they do close-ups of Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase. So I don't know why that green screen comes in out of nowhere.
I'm blanking. I don't remember those moments.
I wouldn't be able to pinpoint that. But I imagine, like, my assumption would just be, like, yeah, they probably went back and inserted some jokes here and there or something like that. Because I imagine shooting on location was, like, the fact that they were shooting on location, that had to have been expensive, even for back then, you know?
Chevy Chase tried to hold the wires together, and Dan Aykroyd recalling the rocket. That was one of my favorite scenes, along with them being dropped in the fort. What was, I think, Ed, you said you enjoyed the surgery scene?
Yeah, that one... You know, I kept expecting Terry Gilliam to come out and do something radical, but no, he was just there. But no, I that was like one of the more fun parts, and definitely the examination. Like Miguel already touched on it when Chevy Chase comes walking in with a broken arm and an eye patch. It's just like, oh, that's great. It's just like, this is perfect. Like, and I was going to say Frank Oz was the guy running the examination. Yeah. So that was fun. It was just like a fun little scene. And I think that's where that moments like that is when the movie shine the most, for sure.
Right. And Chevy Chase in that scene, he's obviously cheating, and he asks Dan Aykroyd for help. And on the back of his test, he writes, "What does KGB stand for?" And then Dan Aykroyd flips over his test and writes what it means. But I'm thinking you have to turn those tests in.
They're going to know.
They're going to see what's written on the, like, what does, he's going to see that written on the back of your test form.
But isn't that the whole reason they got picked anyway? They had the worst scores. They were obviously cheating.
Yeah.
They said, bring him in.
They wanted the dunces.
They're perfect. I couldn't help but think, as the movie got towards the end and I was, you know, trying to come up with some notes and things to say for today, just like if they made the movie today, who would play these roles? And I had three names, like, just kind of come to me really rapid fire, like bang, bang, bang. I knew exactly who I wanted to put in a couple spots. So if you guys don't mind, I'd like to run that by you real quick. You can tell me if it's a stupid decision or not.
Go ahead. Yeah, go.
So first off, I had no idea what the lady spy's name was. Obviously, I just learned recently that was Bill Hader's wife. Not Bill Hader. Dan Aykroyd's wife. Spoiler alert for what I'm about to say.
You want Bill Hader, yeah.
So I just wrote lady spy. I didn't know her name at all. But I thought Margot Robbie would totally play that role today. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Just like the pretty spy. She's off doing her own thing. Blah, 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 blah. And at the end, she, you know what I mean, gets together with who I think Chevy Chase should be replaced by is Ryan Gosling. I think Ryan Gosling would be perfect for this type of movie. And I want to point out one specific thing that when it clicked with me was at the missile scene when, you know, Dan Aykroyd's given all these instructions and he tells Chevy Chase, you know, go bust up whatever that machine is. And he takes this rock and he just goes, kunk. You know what I mean? And it's just like this really dainty thing, but then the thing explodes kind of in front of him. And I was just like, Ryan Gosling would totally play all of these moments. He would totally know how to do that. You know what I mean? And I thought that would be a solid replacement. And then, of course, for Dan Aykroyd, I think Bill Hader would be, especially the hair. I don't know what it was about his hair in this movie that made me think about Bill Hader. He's like Justin Bieber, like Beatles looking hair.
Yeah.
But that would be like great. My three main recast.
I love that. I think that would be.
I'd definitely see that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if they wanted to make that today, count me in. I want to see it.
What's Margot? I'm sorry. What's
Margot Robbie?
If Margot Robbie played the part of the female spy, they would have to beef that role up for her, because the female spy in this movie is really, really secondary to Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase. They would have to beef up that role if she played it.
They would have to make it more of like a trio.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I just
that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I thought Ryan Gosling especially.
Bill Hader already like a well-established like genius in comedy. Ryan Gosling does really well in comedies too. I think that they would play off of each other so well.
Yeah,
Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd do.
Yeah, because you're right, Ed. Even though there's some parts in this movie that you're just kind of like, I don't know if I'm 100% into this. At least when they get the chance to like really play off each other, that's when the movie shines.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, just the little scenes where they're driving in, they're being attacked by this tribe, and they're driving away in an ambulance, and they're just slapping each other. I'm going to drive. No, you drive. Dan Aykroyd is basically the only friend that Chevy Chase has from Saturday Night Live. Pretty much everybody else from that show despises him. And we all know that Chevy Chase has a reputation of being an asshole in a lot of his movies.
Yeah.
I think this goes a lot to Dan Aykroyd. Dan Aykroyd was, you know, very close to John Belushi. We all know that. And John Belushi and Chevy Chase hated each other, but Dan was able to stay friends with Chevy Chase and John Belushi at the same time. So I think that goes a lot to saying what kind of person Dan Aykroyd is.
Speaking of the kind of person that Dan Aykroyd is, I know he's very much into alien conspiracies and stuff like that, UFOs and stuff like that. I thought it was hilarious when they're trying to take the missile from the Russians, when already in those ridiculous fur outfits, they dressed up like aliens to try and scare the Russians. Coming down that slope, I just thought it was like, oh man, you know Dan Aykroyd came up with that one.
That's 100% Dan Aykroyd. But in that scene, it's pure Chevy Chase, because Dan Aykroyd, they're speaking in Russian, and Dan Aykroyd is having trouble, you know, he's having trouble, you know, figuring it out. He's going over in his head what they're saying in Russian. And Chevy Chase is just like, where did you learn your Russian? JCPenney? And that's the typical, it's like Chevy Chase knows no Russian, is not helping at all, but he's bitching at the guy who's helping him out right now. It's like, that's typical
and
Chevy
has
Chase.
Been the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think we, so you guy.
Spies Like Us.
Spies Like Us. Ed, I'm going to say you're lukewarm on it. Miguel, I think you liked it a little better than Ed. I think you might give it another try.
I'd watch it again.
I enjoy this movie.
No, I definitely watch it again. It's definitely one of those just like easy watching movies.
All right, so that's it. So this has been another episode of the Dan Aykroyd Podcast. I want to thank Miguel and Eddie for doing this with me. Thank you, guys. So we're going to put on the books. Everybody listening to this, we're going to do Sergeant Bilko next. We're going to do it again. We're going to do it much better than I did when I first did this podcast.
I also want to point out that I love that every time we do one of these episodes, we always end up talking about yet another. I don't even think I know that many Dan Aykroyd movies off the top of my head, but we'll talk about one on the podcast and it's like, well, all right, we got another episode to go.
We got another episode.
Dan Aykroyd is everywhere all the time. Yes. We need to.
Because I recently did Sneakers again with a friend of mine, and I call these the redo overdid. So we're going to redo overdid Sergeant Bilko.
All right.
Good.
All right, gentlemen. Perfect. Thank you for doing this, and we'll see everybody here next time on the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. That should help people find this podcast. And no matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
Ah, here we are.
I'm Hadley, internal medicine. And Dr. Lafong, communicable diseases. Dr. Boyer, bacteriology. And Dr. Stinson, Marston, and Gill of the Northampton Trauma Institute, and Dr. Imhouse of the Zurich Relief Fund. These are our newly arrived surgeons, Drs. Trowbridge and Greenbaum.
Doctor?
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
Cross the Streams Media.
This has been a Cross the Streams Media podcast.
You're good with tools, aren't you? Devices, instruments.
What? Are you kidding? You're talking to Milbarge here. You want something converted, built, dismantled, repaired, modified? You're talking to Mr. Hands.
Mind if I play through? Doctor? Doctor? Glad I'm not sick.